I was 7 years old when Russian invaded Poland. I even remember day they came. It was Sunday, very beautiful Sunday, the most unpleasant feeling we could feel in the air, something terrible was happening.
This is the story of an epic wartime journey which begins in eastern Poland. It still haunts the men and women who were just children when they were deported to the Soviet Union.
I hate to see food being wasted. I go and feed the birds with the bread. I won't waste anything. I've sat at this table with cakes and
picking the crumbs up
like that. You know, if food's put on the table, I never question what it is. Oh, what's that? And when people do that, I think, oh, blimey, it's the time you went to Siberia.
This is also the story of the next generation, born in the UK, whose lives have been shaped by their parents' exile in Britain. Like Teresa Borsuk.
A lot of the songs that, you know, my parents and their generation, all the Poles in England, sang were all about loss, about finding home, being looked after by Our Lady, and especially the Virgin Mary.
But what would have been the context that you would have heard them when you were at home?
Every Saturday evening when we had a gathering, there we'd go, singing. We always wondered what our neighbours thought. Shall I just play it? Yeah, we'll start in a minute.
Around 30,000 Polish people arrived in Britain early on in the war, having fled the Nazis. My father and his parents were among them. They're reasonably well known to us, especially the pilots who fought in the Battle of Britain. What is less well known is that a far greater number, over 120,000 Polish citizens, arrived here after the war, uprooted not by the Nazis, but by the Soviets, who had invaded Poland from the east. Their journey can rightly be described as an odyssey. As children, Cieszę and Ryszek Szybowski lived not far from one another in the eastern region of Poland known as Kresy, the borderlands. In February 1940, Russian soldiers came for Cieszę's family. This is where their odyssey begins.
Children taken out of their deep sleep in very cold night. I expect we were so terrified. All of us cried, I expect. Mother completely lost
her head.
She was running around and he said, get your things together, the Russian. And my mother said, what for? We're going to be shot anyway. But he said, take as much as you can, because you never know. They put our horses to sledges, packed us on the sledges and took us to the nearest railway station. Packed into
Cattle trains.
I'm
sorry to interrupt. In 1914, February, was extremely severe winter, 40 degrees minus centigrade.
So, Ryszek, was this exactly the same for you? Is that the same memory, is
very,
it?
Very similar.
Another thing I do remember is when the trains sometimes stopped in the stations and we could see the same sort of trains, people used to shout to each other.
Where do you come from?
Where do you come from? Who are you?
Where are you going?
Where are you going?
Hundreds of thousands of Polish civilians were being deported to the most inhospitable corners of the Soviet Union. Their crime was to live in a region which Stalin had earmarked for Soviet expansion. Anyone who owned land or belonged to the professions or whose profile didn't meet Soviet requirements was simply removed.
I can show you a few things that my grandfather must have gone around the house to gather up. He went and got his marriage certificate, my father's school certificates. Very odd
That's
things.
So funny you should say that, because my father, when my father died, he left Poland at the very beginning of the war at the age of 11 with his parents, and amongst the things I found, his mother's school certificate, yes. Like school reports.
Yes, school reports I have. Identity, wasn't it? Who am I? So, they were deported to various parts of Siberia, and they were in hard labour camps for 2 years. I've actually got a sheet here. This is my mum's next-in-line sister, a page about their experience in Siberia.
Oh, my goodness.
And it just says... A jedzenia to tylko woda i chleb. I chleba nie wystarczało. Czasem dwa dni nie jadłam. Which is that all we had was bread and water, and there wasn't enough. And sometimes for 2 days I didn't eat anything.
Most of all, I suppose we remember hunger.
Hunger and also if you're something...
And insects. Because there was no soap. You cannot imagine how people had to live.
Lice was a killer.
Lice was absolutely eaten us alive.
Hello, hello. Hello.
I'm joining Aniela Ziuchowicz's family. They're gathering to celebrate her 87th birthday. Aniela was 9 years old when she arrived in Siberia. And whilst her mother and older sisters worked in the forest, she was sent to school, where she was taught in Russian.
To take the child and push us into the big forest, I think it was really, really idiotic. I don't blame anybody but Stalin. It was his idea. I mean, if he thought that we are going to be a communist going there, he made big mistake because... Instead, we hate him for that, you know.
Looking from your point of view as the next generation, what did you see as the legacy of that experience which your parents' generation had gone through? What did you observe? Aniela's eldest daughter, Lucia.
I think this was survival of the fittest, and that was both my parents were survivors and were very strong characters.
That, in a good way.
In a good way. maybe. Yes, absolutely. But our parents were our heroes.
Everything changed for the deportees. When in June 1941 the Nazis turned on their former ally and invaded the Soviet Union, Russia became part of the Western Alliance, joining Britain in the fight against Hitler. News trickled through that a Polish army was being formed in the south of the Soviet Union. Emaciated survivors made their way towards it, across thousands of miles of forest and desert plains, living on berries and the kernels of cotton seeds. Cesha's mother bartered her wedding ring for train tickets through Uzbekistan.
We were all skeletons. By then, my older sister, she was 3 years older than I am, but she was extra skeleton. Russian doctor came along. He said to my mother, I am very sorry, but that child is in agony. She's dying. I would love to help, but I have nothing. But I do remember he brought a few sugar
lumps.
And why do I remember? Because I was so jealous that she got sugar. And I, being well, didn't get anything. I dreamed about being ill so I could get this sugar. It's pathetic.
Cesha and Ryszek, who grew up so close to each other in Poland, would only meet and marry when they came to England years later.
So how did you actually meet?
You see, Polish there is Polish dance. Community.
Polish dance.
So you met at a dance?
Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember.
We tried to teach you to dance.
It was good enough.
Polka or Oberek, he was completely lost.
I kept you, not hear me.
It's not important who did what.
No, but it is important.
It's a difficult question to ask, but does it give you a particular bond, the fact that you both went through the same kind of experience? Do you think it makes a difference?
Definitely, yes.
Have you talked about it a lot over the years?
No.
Not really.
No. Parents wouldn't talk about it because it was too hard for them.
Yes.
Because they got through such hell.
The men joined the army, now under British command, and were evacuated to Iran. Women and children followed them across the Caspian Sea, crammed into boats in their thousands. Their arrival in Iran, then Persia, marked a new beginning. Whilst their fathers went with the army to Iraq and the Middle East, then Italy, the children and their mothers were sent to refugee camps in British protectorates, some in India, some in Africa, where they spent the rest of the war in safety.
24, 24.
Like Richard, who sits next to me, I've known the guy for 70-odd years. It's wonderful to meet up and relate, you know, some of the experiences that we lived through.
Richard Slusharenko and Ryszard Trojanowski first met in a camp in Uganda. I met them at a Polish lunch club in Derby, recalling their boyhood adventures by Lake Victoria.
We were swimming in the lake, yes, remember that? Yes. And I left you and went to help my mother. She told me, have you been swimming? I said, no. And she whacked me and said, you are lying. What I will tell father if crocodile eats you?
It didn't put us off, to be honest, but...
We were smoking.
Oh, yes.
The It's not the, the tobacco leaves, the plant that are the big leaves, and we used to pick up those that have fallen down, they're brown, we roll them and you smoke them.
It sounds like there was quite a lot of room for getting up to mischief in Africa.
Freedom.
Freedom.
My mother was working, there was nobody to look after me, I had the freedom to go, and this is why we could go and swim in the lake, because the mothers were busy. In the camp, there were jobs to do. Women were engaged, and it was mainly women. There were very few men in the camp. They were all in the army, in the forces. So they were busy. They couldn't look after us, so we had a freedom. We used to go into the jungle. We all had bows, arrows, swords. We used to go hunting. Seriously, and I mean hunting. And if we killed anything, we ate it. Yeah?
Yes, yes, I quite agree with you.
Where were you in Africa? Do you remember the name of the place?
Yes, Tanganyika. We arrived in Dar es Salaam, and English ladies with their hats on, with their gloves on, and they welcomed everybody, little sandwiches and little drinks, and flowering shrubs, oleanders, white and pink, and it was absolutely fantastic. We were taken to cinema. Things like this I remember well. And there was colored film on. And they showed how flowers open. And I can still see those beautiful flowers opening.
Oh, this Jerry brought from his travel.
It's not just the extent of the journey these people made that I find so extraordinary. It's the extreme contrast between one half and the other. From snow to sunshine, from desert plains to tropical rainstorms. Jerry Kubica.
Oh, from India, it's all smells and sounds. I remember walking with my mother and I had a sausage in my hand and I was chewing on that sausage and it was a lovely smell and taste of that sausage. I went to the place where they killed pigs and I remember very vividly two men, Indian men, holding the pig by the front legs, another Indian holding the pig by the rear legs and a third Indian with a big knife going vroom. And then squeals and blood squirting all over the place, smell of the blood, and that's it. And that was the end, and they cut the pig up. And what was of interest to me was the fact that they took the bladder out, emptied the bladder, and then gave it to the boys. And the boys, they would blow it up and make a big balloon out of that, and then attach the balloon to their arms, and they went swimming. So that's a vivid memory. And after that, I have so many memories of India. Oh, lots and lots and lots.
How long did you stay in India? Do you remember?
Yes, I would say from 42 or early 43 to September 47. In September 47, we left India on the journey to the UK. We were on a boat, I remember the name, it was called Empire Brent. And for a little boy of 7 and a half, 8, it was a tremendous experience. One of the sailors took me down into the boat, and we climbed the stairs down into the guts of the boat, and it was really frightening. It was like being inside a huge animal, and you heard that noise, boom, 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 because they were loading coal, shoveling coal into the furnaces which were generating steam. And then the sailor gave me apples and oranges. Oh, but then eventually we arrived in the UK, and I remember getting off the boat and all the people walking down the gangway, and they were stopping on the way and saying, England, England, England.
When we arrived at Southampton on the 8th of March, 1948, we were told that there'll be fog.
Richard Trojanowski.
Now, as a child, you know what's cold, because I've been in Siberia. You know what's hot, being in Africa. What is fog?
We all had malaria. We were given Atabrina for malaria. Tiny little yellow tablets. But it made you
yellow.
Completely yellow. So this yellow people arrived.
Do you know any English at this? Had you been learning English in Africa?
Yes, yes. But my English was not very good, not at all. We were all going back to Poland.
At the time, nobody thought that they were coming to England to stay.
No. It was another stopover on the way to our country.
After the war was over, some British people wondered why the Poles were still here. Why hadn't they gone home? The truth was that most of them had no homes to go back to. The eastern borderlands of Poland were now part of the Soviet Union, as western Ukraine and Belarus. The rest of the country was under communist rule. Conscious of a debt owed to Polish men who'd served in the British Army, Churchill offered them the chance to settle in Britain. They were housed in resettlement camps, former Army or Air Force bases scattered all over the country. Many children hadn't seen their fathers for several years.
Mum said, "Slavoj, this is your dad." I said, "Dad? What's dad? What is dad?" But this was my dad. And I remember walking with him amongst the Beczki Śmiechu, the Nissen huts. This was my first meeting with somebody called dad, my father. He's an ex-army man. So there was nothing that I could do quite right for him. I couldn't stand up straight. I couldn't squat properly. I was always doing something wrong, not as a soldier should be doing. So he was expecting so much more from me than I could deliver. But I did have a lot of respect for him.
Did he speak any English?
No. Neither my father nor mother could speak English.
It must have been very difficult for that older generation of Poles to find work if they didn't speak English.
Well, yes. It's not just that they didn't speak English, but there was very little work around. So the kind of work that he could do would be on building sites.
After moving out of the resettlement camps, which they moved very quickly, actually, because some people stayed till the 50s. My father bought a house with a friend in Stoke-on-Trent. I have no idea how he managed that, but I remember him telling me about going to work in the potteries.
Oh, yes, here, look.
Yeah. Umintona, at Minton's.
Umintona. Permission granted for employment as
potting, I don't know, potting something hob, it looks like, with Messrs. Mintons.
And it says here, reports marriage to, yep, Agnieszka Lichwa of 60...
Penkhull New Road, Stoke-on-Trent.
So they married at the Church of Our Lady of Angels in St. Peter. So what did your mother do?
The years of the war were quite important years for their education. And so my mother in Africa learnt to sew. And so she ended up being a seamstress, and that's what she did for her whole life, really.
What was their relationship to your education, you and your sister?
It was all about giving us the opportunities and making it as easy for us as possible to do as well as we could. You know, as a young child, I remember very early on having a sense of, sorry, I find it quite emotional, not rocking the boat.
Yeah.
They'd been through enough. They'd had a really hard time. So I was determined to do well as I could. Sorry.
Teresa is an architect, one of many of the children of refugees to make her mark in this country, part of a larger legacy of their parents' experience.
My name is Les Borisiewicz. I went to medical school in South Wales, where I met my wife.
So Leszek Borisiewicz is one of Britain's leading medical research scientists. He was born on a council estate in South Wales to parents who'd arrived with nothing. And until the age of five, he spoke only Polish at home.
Back to Cambridge for 7 years as vice chancellor, and now back and forth to London in my new role as chair of Cancer Research UK.
Was there a kind of scientific bent in the family as a whole?
No, not really. I think professions do seem to matter. Why the professions? I think it is a sense of security. You would be in a society which would respect you because of your profession or would worry less about the funny sounding surname. So I suspect deep down my parents' mind was also the idea that if you're in a profession, you're likely to be able to establish yourself in the broader British society much more readily.
People have found different ways to make their home here.
That's still gross enough. If I took you out there, I've just pulled a beetroot out, was the last thing. Come on.
Richard's parents had owned a small holding in what is now Ukraine.
I mean, I wouldn't have got in the Ukraine where I've got here, to be honest. No way. But for my parents, totally opposite, you see. But for me, I'm better off. I've had beetroot growing here, potatoes, rhubarb, you see. I had some carrots growing for the horses. That's a walnut tree. These are plum trees. Yeah. That's a damson tree there. Apple trees. That's a little conference pear. Cherry.
So it's almost like having a small holding of your own.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's lovely.
Aniela lives in a Polish retirement village on a former RAF base in Penrhos in North Wales. Her daughter Lucia is showing me round.
The Polish Ex-Servicemen's Association bought this.
Oh, I see.
These were all corrugated iron barracks.
I noticed so everything's written in Polish first, then Welsh, then English.
Absolutely. Yeah. We used to come here as children because the guide camp, the brownie camps, were held here.
I noticed there's a scout hut.
Exactly.
The scouting movement has always been important in Poland. In exile, it mattered even more.
So my mum was a leader. She was a leader of the guides. And that's where the mast is. So every morning, we all used to stand around here and we'd raise the Polish flag.
The connection to Poland here is palpable. Everywhere are reminders of the country they left behind.
And that's the church.
The church. And so that looks like there's a mast.
Just going to open the doors. There looks like there is a service on. Yeah. They've just got a new priest started.
So is the priest on site?
Well, lives on site, yes.
Yeah, okay. It's beautiful. Can't help feeling it's just like this little isolated world. It's so far.
It's a village. If we're going quietly and just... Oh, it's just finishing the mass.
Aniela, for your generation, do you feel completely Polish? Did you ever feel British?
To tell you the truth, I'm very loyal to English government, never do anything wrong, and I'm very pleased that they let us stay, you know. But I think deep down, I feel very Polish. I have Polish television, I have Polish newspapers, I do crosswords Polish.
Lucia, how does it work for you?
I couldn't really tell you. I used to worry about it because when we went to Poland to visit family, they called us the English girls.
Yeah.
But when we were in England at school, they called us the Polish girls. And
where did you want to fit in?
I'm not sure that we were allowed an opinion. My parents didn't let us decide that. They were very much in a holding pattern, and we were going to go back.
Yeah,
we were going back.
So was that something that you believed, you were going to be able to go back to Poland?
Well, we thought communist regime will go sooner than he did.
Aniela feels Polish. Others who, like her, arrived in the UK as children feel differently. Jerry Kubica.
One of my English friends asked me, Jerry, when are you going back home? And I asked myself, what did she mean? Did she mean Poland? It was like a knockout blow. And Poland, for me, was non-existent. It was miles away. I had no attachment to Poland at that time. Did she mean Poland? It was a shock. What is home? And the home for us was here. This was our home. London was our home. England was our home.
Where do you come from?
Where do you come from? Who are you?
Where are you going?
Where are you going?
Polish people are now the largest foreign-born community in the UK. Teresa Borsuk.
The Kresy Poles set up Polish communities, Polish churches, Polish parishes. And then as they were dying out, you thought, well, what's going to happen? And then it was just amazing. In 2004, the churches are all full again. The Polish parish, the Polish school that I used to go to had maximum 100 pupils. Now it's over 500.
Really? Do you ever have any connection with that generation of Poles? Oh, or yeah. Did your parents?
That was very interesting, because as my father was getting older and more infirmed, all of his carers were Polish, speaking Polish. And that was brilliant. You know, they understood him. This is just one of my...
When you look at a map of the world and plot the wartime odyssey made by these children and their parents, it forms almost a complete circle. Britain is so close to Poland, and yet they've travelled halfway across the globe to get here. It's an astonishing thing when you think about it, to carry a journey like that inside you, even if you can barely remember where it began. Tryszek Grzybowski.
And unfortunately, my youngest brother, Michal, he was 4 years old, died in German measles in Tashkent. He died, and but we were traveling, so when he died, we buried him near the track. He was a very jolly boy. He used to sing or say Russian rhyme. I still can hear him.
One little song. From, oddly enough, I don't remember many, but from the kindergarten I remember it so clearly. Hey, dzieci, dzieci, dzisiaj sobota. I would say it in English. Hey, guys, it's Saturday. All the work's done. Let's go and play. The teacher will come with us. Let's stamp our feet. Let's clap our hands. Let's have a good time. This was a little song that we sang, a lovely little song. And I walk along the riverbank here sometimes, and it comes back to my, memory.